Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The government has set up a new task force to look into converting empty office space into much needed housing. Now, more than 5,500 commercial properties are empty. That's in Dublin alone. And many of the older blocks that were built in the 60s and the 70s, they're struggling to attract tenants because they're outdated, the layouts, and they've poor energy efficiency. Well, architect John Dobbin is on the government's task force. He's with me here in the studio, and quantity surveyor Shay Lally is here too. You're both welcome. Good to have you with us to talk about this, because it's fascinating, because this could provide a solution for a lot of people. Will you tell me, John, about the unused office space that we have here? What sort of buildings are we talking about?
They're largely, as you say, they're buildings from the starting in the 1960s all the way up to the 1980s, which time has really moved past. And they were built for one particular mode of working, a bit like sort of the interior of Mad Men, if people are familiar with it. Private offices around the outside, people doing largely paper-based clerical work in the middle. And those are the kind of activities those buildings are designed for. And nobody works like that anymore.
And no one wants to use those as commercial spaces anymore. Is that what you're finding?
No. And they don't meet modern requirements for sustainability and things like that are really hugely important in modern grade A spaces, we would call it. So these buildings, we have a generation of buildings here which really are not going to be used. It's extremely expensive to bring them up to any kind of modern standard. And we won't meet modern standards. And they're too small in many cases to kind of redevelop sensibly.
So you're looking now on this task force at what might be done.
Yes, that's right. And I can't sort of go into it in major detail at the moment, but it came in many ways out of a study that we started in our practice in Shea Cleary Architects about 18 months ago, because of things that we saw happening in places like the States and Canada, where they have even bigger problems with office vacancy. And we started to imagine that those things might happen in a smaller way in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of led us to it. We thought it was a number of years in the future, and surprised us how quickly it's become a major issue.
And have they come up with a solution in those places where you've been looking, the States and Canada?
Oh, they have. And they're certainly incentivizing it and making it a way to bring people back to live in city centres. Of course, American cities are quite different to our cities, but also their buildings are quite different. And ironically, buildings in Ireland from those periods are actually much easier to reimagine as residential, and to reimagine as really good quality residential.
Mm-hmm. Well. And we'll talk about some of the problems that might be encountered in that regard in a moment, because Shay, the buildings are not initially built for homes to house people. I mean, are we not just contemplating shoehorning people into a living space that was designed to be an office?
I think the buildings John is talking about, I think the floor plate in them does lend itself nicely. I think if you look at the more modern buildings, Claire, like the ones that were kind of from the IFSC generation onwards, I think then in that case you're kind of using buildings that will be somewhat unsuitable, and you might have issues around design and I suppose light and stuff like that. But the buildings, as I say, John is talking about, they will be more suitable.
Mm-hmm. In what way? Tell us how they would work and how difficult it might be to convert them.
Well, it's just the floor span, essentially. Like, there was one example over in City West where they've converted a building, and to the best of my knowledge, it was purchased by a housing association. And because of the floor plate, they've ended up with, like, say, back rooms which have no natural light, whereas the buildings John's referring to, like, the floor span is smaller, essentially. So as a result, you'd have, like, a dual aspect. You'd have, like, light on both sides of the unit, like the apartment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the ironic thing is that the very things that make these buildings really, really bad for modern office space are the very things that actually potentially make them really good for residential space. And I mean, the attributes of these buildings are such that if you did convert them in some of the ways that we're talking about, actually, they'd be somewhat better than some of the apartments that we're actually building ground up, because they have better floor to ceiling heights and they potential to be a little bit larger.
Is that all it is, the floor to ceiling height? Or what else is there that you think that might be advantageous for homes?
There's floor to ceiling. I mean, our buildings that we're talking about are largely concrete. They're largely pretty narrow. They're kind of 12 to 14 metres wide. And all of those buildings are exactly the same. So if you figure out the way to do it in one, you figured it out for an awful lot of office stock in Dublin. And you can have dual aspect apartments working within the existing parameters of those buildings, light on both sides, that just by absolutely beautiful chance, because of the way these buildings were built, they end up the perfect size for a two-bed apartment in our national guidance. And mm-hmm. that's just through kind of luck. So floor-to-ceilings as well can be, you know, on a modern scheme, we might build our floor-to-ceilings at 2.5 or something like that, but they could be up to 2.7 and 2.8. They're like loft apartments that you would get in the centre of London or Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So it's not bad quality residential. It could potentially be much better quality residential.
And what
they
about
make for interesting
sorry, go
buildings,
ahead,
though? Yeah, they would make for interesting buildings and interesting spaces to live. And also, the location is ideal for a lot of people who say want to be close to the city. Like a lot of these buildings that we're talking about are in Dublin 1, 2, possibly Dublin 3, Dublin 4. So it would be ideal in that regard, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about the cost, John? Have you looked at that at the cost differential? You know, between bringing them up to residential standard and where they are now.
Well, I won't take the place of my QS colleague here because I do that enough in design team meetings. But we have looked at it in a huge amount of detail and with our QS colleagues. And the strange thing, we thought that it would be much more expensive to convert a building to residential because it's just more stuff in a building, you know, bathrooms and toilets and kitchens and so on. The strange thing we found is that there was almost no difference between doing a commercial refurb and changing it into residential. And the reason for that is that the cost of mechanical electrical equipment in office refurbs is high and getting higher all the time. So strangely and counterintuitively, perhaps, it's relatively economical to do a residential conversion of a building like this. And even more importantly is it's faster. And of course, the person in the 1960s and 70s had taken all the risk out of it for you. They've already dug the basement. They've taken all the risk in the ground. All those things that cause cost overruns in buildings mm-hmm. are kind of already there.
Well, we better get that verified now by the QS yes. sitting beside you, Shay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when you do go, when you're developing, you're digging the ground, and it's a massive uncertainty when you are digging the ground. So John's spot on in what he's saying. I guess the other side of it is that if you look at these buildings, it's a bit like, I suppose, if you look at buying a new build versus buying a fixer-upper. And when you buy a fixer-upper, like, they can be like Pandora's box. You're just unsure what you're going to get, and you start stripping them out. You're going to uncover certain things that might need to be treated. So there is that element of uncertainty, I suppose, when you are refitting any building, be it a commercial or a residential property. So that'd be just one side from a cost perspective. So there still would be a risk element within Eclair, to be fair, you know. So that's what I'd say on that. And then I suppose, like, on a cost side of things as well, if you have a low-level building, it's going to be cheaper to essentially convert from an office into, you know, a residential development. Whereas if it's a higher-rise building, it will be more expensive, you know, and particularly if it's a more modern design building, you're going to have issues around things like the glazing and stuff like that. Whereas the older buildings that John's referring to don't tend to have, you know, the same sort of glazing that we do have in newer office
blocks.
Okay,
will you both grab a pair of headphones? Because listening to all of that, we've had Ben Clifford on the line, Professor of Spatial Planning at University College London. Ben, thanks for joining us this morning. We wanted to talk to you because back in 2013, 11 years ago now, the government there, led by David Cameron, changed the rules, the planning rules, to allow offices in the UK to be turned into residential accommodation. Will you explain to us how they changed those rules?
Yeah, good morning. It was a deregulation. So the approach in England that was taken in 2013 was that planning's a sort of big barrier, so let's get rid of it. So if a building was in office use, it could then be converted to residential use without needing planning permission, just needing a few sort of technical checks. So it took out the role of local planners in local councils in having a role in the governance of these conversions and their design.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work?
Not very well. So, done a few studies of it. It led to really poor quality housing. And that's the problem. I mean, I should say that the principle's right and the advantages sort of John was talking about there completely agree with. The other advantages is about embodied carbon. So if we're thinking environmentally, demolishing buildings is bad for the environment. It's better to keep them and reuse them if you can. But I think you need to think about the quality of conversion and what rules lead to good quality conversions. So what we saw was a lot of housing created that was very small, single aspect, no access to any sort of outdoor space, and in some cases, really bad locations. So some office buildings are in great sort of town and city centre locations, but others are on industrial estates, business parks, neighbouring uses that perhaps aren't that suitable, or, you know, quite cut off from other services.
Mm-hmm. So we would need to guard against those problems happening here. Shay, small houses, small homes, no outdoor space, and these places in the wrong locations. I mean, we could run into those problems very easily here if we decide to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. But myself and John were chatting before we came in, and we were chatting about zoning and stuff. So I think that, like, some elements of what's being said there, it's unlikely that that would be permitted here, that we'd have, I suppose, residential units in, like, industrial estates, or, you know, where you'd kind of have light industrial units. I think what we're chatting about is more city centre, or, you know, on the fringes of the city centre, like Dublin 1, 2, 3, 4, essentially, when you're looking at Dublin, you know. So I think that would help to avoid that element, you know.
And the reality of our zoning system is it wouldn't allow you to do that anyway, in the same way as it did happen in the UK. And I agree with everything that's been said there. It did in the UK lead to some very, very poor outcomes. But the reality is we have the opportunity. Nobody's advocating for that over here. Everybody's advocating for residential quality. I mean, what we're saying is this actually could be quite better quality. And that's the key thing.
Ben, can you tell us about any examples where it did work and it was successful?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the design was essentially left to the sort of whim of the developers, some actually have been really invested in high quality schemes. So you're seeing schemes all across England, but there's some in central London, Parker Tower, I know in Holborn, really nice conversion that's added on balconies, outdoor space, thought about how you can configure the flats so that everyone has adequate natural light to all rooms, double aspect, things like that. There's a scheme I know in Croydon in South London, where it was a 60s office building, and they've sort of played with the modernist design as a design feature. Again, good space standards. There, they didn't add balconies, but they put a roof terrace on, so everybody has outdoor space. So we do have examples of good as well as lots and lots of bad. So, absolutely.
So you're saying, don't not do it, don't not consider it, but you've got to do it right.
Absolutely that, yeah. Make sure that it's done well. Think about what it's like to live in these places. There's a big relationship between our housing and our health and well-being. And so we want places that are going to promote, you know, good quality lives for people to live in.
Because, John, we're not saying that this is going to solve the housing problem, but how much of a solution could it provide? Like, how many units are we looking at possibly providing through this method if we were to decide to go down this road?
Yeah, no, nobody's pretending at all that this is a one-stop fix for the housing. I mean, we've been working with our colleagues in Cushman & Wakefield, Ireland, and we estimate over a fairly short to medium term, there's probably 7,000 units that could be added. So it's not going to meet the targets that we're talking about, and I don't think anybody is pretending that it will. But can it make a difference? Yes, it can. And of course, there's two other really important aspects to this. One is carbon. It's much more efficient to keep a building and to add to it, and that's just something that we have to do. We must do. And the second thing is, refurbishing these buildings to residential as opposed to sort of a decrepit commercial space will bring people back into our city centres, which is desperately needed. And this is not just something which is interesting from a viability perspective or from a kind of abstract providing housing, although it is desperately important. This is about bringing life back into the city centre, and it is simply the right thing for our city centres.
Shay, you're agreeing with that there.
Yeah, I do agree that we do need to bring life back into the city. My only concern would be is like to do this and have, say, 7,000 units. And if we were to do it in a short space of time, my concern is that we would end up making mistakes in the process of doing it. And I do think it would be good to kind of develop a model, like to do a few on a small scale, if you like, show that they can be successful, and then get, you know, the larger developers who are more likely to build a new apartment block to look at this kind of form of conversion as a viable way of developing and creating apartments. So my concern would be if we go with it at speed initially, we may end up making an awful lot of mistakes like they've done in the UK and put ourselves under pressure. So I would be in favour of seeing, as I say, like a model, if you like, put together by doing a few good case studies, a few good examples. And also, I think we should look at using some of these vacant offices for student accommodation and that type of accommodation,
you know. I was going to say that
because
we've all been talking about apartments here, but maybe that is another option. If you have a difficult to convert building, that you might look at creating single rooms then with shared space. And I know shared living got a bad name over the last number of years in this country, but if you're looking at Monday to Friday accommodation for students that was affordable, would that be an option?
Yeah, Claire, I think that would lend itself perfectly, because you've loads of students who are living in apartments, they're living in houses at the moment. They might necessarily want to be there, you know, they might want to be closer to the city, but they're sharing a house because it might be just the cheaper option or the only option that they have. So I think absolutely if you were to do that and they were kind of centrally located, if you like, in some of these buildings, it will definitely free up houses and apartments for others to rent.
We need housing. We need residential of every single kind, of absolutely every single kind, and that includes everything.
Yeah, that's why everything is being considered. We're going to leave it there, but thank you very much for coming in, Shay Lally and John Dobbin. John, we look forward to the results from the Government Task Force whenever that happens, and Professor Ben Clifford, who joined us from the UK too. Back after this break.